Hello, welcome to the Handgun World podcast. This is Monday, August 10th, episode number 2. Why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop. This is Bob Main. I'm your host of the Handgun World podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for allowing me to talk about one of my very favorite hobbies, and that is the shooting sports and firearms. We have three topics of discussion that I would like to give you an overview as to what we're going to talk about, then some announcements, and then we'll dive right in. The first topic is how to buy a used handgun. I want to share with you some tips and ideas on getting the most for your money and getting a good value when you're buying a used handgun. We're all under a strict budget these days with the economy and the situation that we're in, so we're all looking for some good deals out there. I've been able to find some lately, and so I want to share some of that information with you. The second subject matter that I want to discuss is how to get those used handguns online on the internet. The internet is a great source for buying firearms. Regardless of what people tell you, it is definitely possible and oftentimes very practical to get a handgun or any type of a firearm really online, and I want to discuss that. I've got some good personal experience buying and selling on the internet, so I'll cover how to do that as well. And then the third segment, pinheads and patriots. I'm going to borrow that theme from Bill O'Reilly, but I'm going to put a little different twist on it. I'm going to talk about the pinheads of the firearms industry or firearms legislation and people who are real patriots out there to help protect our Second Amendment rights. So again, thank you for tuning in to the Handgun World podcast. I want to talk about our website real quick, www.handgunworld.com. That's probably how you found us, handgunworld.com. The only announcement I want to make before we dive in is soon I'm going to set up a forum. I'm going to set up a discussion forum that's going to be linked to handgunworld.com, and you'll be able to get on there and talk with like-minded people in the firearms industry and also like-minded people that just like to shoot and carry firearms. And when the exchange of ideas takes place on an open discussion forum like that, you'd be surprised what you can learn. So look for that coming soon. Okay. Let's talk about how to buy a used handgun, what to look for. You know, whether you're an experienced buyer or not, there's a lot to be gained from what I'm about to share with you. The first thing I recommend is to take someone with you, if possible, when you go to purchase a used handgun. Whether you're experienced or not, take somebody with you. It's always good to have a second set of eyes and a second set of ears to look at the particular pistol or pistols that you're trying to pick out. It can't hurt. A suggestion I would make about who to take with you, I would really shy away from taking a relative with you. I've seen so many people get stung by taking a relative with them, even if your relative is knowledgeable about guns, okay? And again, you may have a relative very knowledgeable about guns, but folks, I'm telling you, that I don't know what it is. You know, I think relatives feel that you ought to listen to them. And too many times they inject their own opinion and their own preferences, and they influence your buying decision by their own opinion and their own preferences. And a lot of times they will influence you to buy what they would want to buy and not necessarily what it is that you want to buy. So try to find somebody that you know that's a gunsmith or somebody that's fairly knowledgeable about firearms. One thing you can do, and this, you know, I've done this when I was looking for a handgun that I really don't know too much about, is I found somebody who was a gunsmith that had done some work on some of the firearms, and I offered to buy him lunch if he would go shopping with me for about an hour. And I told him that there was a couple of particular handguns that I was keenly interested in, and he took me up on it. And he went with me. He gave me some very good advice. I ended up getting one of the guns that he recommended that we saw that day, and I'm still enjoying it today. If you don't know a gunsmith that you can buy lunch for and take with you, try to find the most knowledgeable person you can that's not a relative, and take them with you. Like I said, offer to buy them lunch or whatever, or offer to pick up their range fees. If they're a shooter, you know, tell them you'll pick up their range fees and you'll buy their ammo at the shooting range for helping you out. Okay? So think about that one. Also, the next point I want to cover. Reputable gun shops. If whenever you can, try to buy from a reputable gun shop. Now, there's reputable gun shops on the internet as well. When I get to the second segment of this podcast, I will be talking about how to find and do business with the reputable gun dealers that are on the internet as well, because there's a lot of them. But if there happens to be a gun store that's near you that has a fairly good reputation, that's a good place to start. You know, keep in mind, the store owner wants to keep, generally most of them want to keep a pretty good reputation. Now, there's exceptions. You know I might get emails saying, you know, Bob, I really got ripped off at this place. The place was 5 miles down from my house, and he was supposed to be very reputable, but he ripped me off. Yes, there's always going to be rip-offs out there. But usually, a local gun shop owner wants to preserve his or her reputation, and chances are they're not going to be selling junk, and you'll be able to spot whether they're selling junk when you employ some of the ideas that I'm going to talk about in this podcast anyway. But that's a good place to start. I'm a big believer also in buying handguns from private citizens. Now, I live in Texas. I don't know where some of you live that are listening to this, but Texas is a pretty gun-friendly state. We still have laws currently in place where you can buy a gun from an individual. And there's also some very good reasons for doing that. Now, if you're in a state where you can't do that, where they don't let you, or where they don't allow private sales, and there are states that don't allow that, then you might want to disregard the next few minutes. But if you're in a state where you can do private sales from individual to individuals, that's a very good way to find some good deals. Now, here's what I would recommend if you're going to buy from an individual. Okay? You know, the chances are very good you're going to be buying from a private person that lives in your metropolitan area or somewhere near you. Offer to meet them at a shooting range. Tell them you're very interested in their gun and you want to shoot it first. And ask them to meet you at a shooting range so you can test fire the gun. Again, offer to buy their own range fees for them, offer to pay for a box or two of ammo so maybe they can practice with one of the other firearms that they happen to own. If they won't meet you at a shooting range to let you test fire, then maybe that's a warning sign. Okay, I've sold a handgun that I owned, and I did just that. As a matter of fact, that's where I got this idea from. The gentleman asked if I could meet him at a range and if he could fire it. And I let him fire an entire box of ammo through it. He liked it, and we made the sale. So that's one thing I would strongly suggest. And again, you buy. You pick up the cost for them to meet you there. Either way, whether you're buying it at a gun shop or whether you're buying it from a private person, when you are looking at the pistol, before handling any firearm, always open the action and double check and triple check that the chamber and the magazines are empty. Make sure the gun is unloaded. Always keep the muzzle of that gun pointed in a safe direction. Don't ever at any time, under any circumstances, point the muzzle of a gun at anything unless you intend to shoot it. So keep it pointed in a safe direction. Triple check the chamber. Put your finger in the chamber, feel to make sure that there's no round in there. Make sure the magazine's empty. Remove the magazine. Every time a firearm changes hands, it should be cleared. So when the gun shop clerk or the private person hands you the firearm, I don't care if they've checked it, you check it again. When you get done examining it, if the other person is smart, they will check it again. Never hurts to be too safe. Okay, if you're at a gun shop, if you're at a gun store, make a note as to whether the gun's on consignment or if it's the property of the actual gun shop or the gun range selling it. There's a big difference. Many people put guns on consignment. In other words, it's still their property, but they're paying a fee and they've signed an agreement with the gun shop to sell it. It's usually a private person that's selling it because the gun shop gets a lot of traffic in there. Or it could be the property of the gun store. You know, maybe they picked it up at an auction or they got it on the internet or whatever. The reason that that's important to know is because I've been able to get good deals on guns that are on consignment. Because many times the actual owner of the firearm is much more willing to negotiate price, you know, especially depending on how long it's been there. Most of the gun shops that have a pistol that's on consignment, most of the time you can ask them what date that they took that gun in. And most of the time they're going to be pretty honest with you. So you'll be able to know if it's been sitting there a week, a month, or 6 months, or whatever. That'll give you an idea as to how much negotiating room you might have, because if the seller, if it's been there for 2 or 3 months and it hasn't sold, the seller might be a whole lot more motivated. So find out if it's a consignment gun or if it's property of the gun shop. If you're at a gun show, and I can't believe I forgot to mention this so far, but gun shows. Obviously, gun shows are a good place to buy firearms. Again, here in Texas, we have excellent laws where we can currently, unless our pinhead officials in the government decide to change this, you can buy a gun from a person at a gun show. You can buy do a face-to-face transaction pretty easily at gun shows. If you're at a show, here's a piece of advice for you. I've done this, so I know it works. When you find a pistol you want to buy, whether it's from a private person at a gun show or from another dealer at a gun show, ask to have a gunsmith look at it. Almost every gun show has more than one gunsmith, and some of them specialize. You know, there might be some gunsmiths that specialize in Glocks, others that specialize in 1911s, you know, others that specialize in revolvers. There's at least a one gunsmith at every gun show. Ask the seller if they will walk over to a gunsmith table with you and allow the gunsmith to look it over and make his or her recommendations. If the seller won't do that, there could be a problem. Other dealers will do it. Okay? Sometimes you got to just ask. I've done this. There was a pistol, and I ended up buying it, by the way. And I asked the dealer at the gun show. I gave him my license, and I gave him a deposit. And I asked him if I could walk that gun over to a gunsmith's table and have it looked at. Well, he decided to come with me. Turned out it checked out pretty well. And I took the advice of the gunsmith, and I bought it. It's often quite feasible to do this, so ask for the permission to do that as well. Look at the overall condition of the gun. Now, the gunsmith's probably going to do this for you, but in case you do not get that opportunity, look at the overall condition of the gun, and try to note the condition of the bluing. If it's a stainless steel gun, obviously you don't have to worry about the bluing, because there is none. It's stainless steel. But, you know, check that, too. Check the whole thing for overall wear. You know, look for rust, you know, pitting on the metal surfaces on the outside. The outside of the gun can also tell you about the inside of the gun. Here's what I mean. If somebody didn't take care of the outside of it, they probably didn't do a very good job taking care of the inside either. So that's your first indicator. Take a look at the grips. Are the grips in decent condition? If it's a 1911 style pistol, you know, look to see if there's chipping, if they're wood grips. You know, make sure that they're in good condition. Make sure all the screws are tight. And things are unmarred. You know, it doesn't have to be perfect. Let's not forget, you're buying a used gun. It doesn't have to be in perfect shape. But look at the grips. Look at the exterior surfaces. If it's something like a Glock or Springfield XD or Smith & Wesson M&P and it's a polymer gun, you know, there's probably not going to be much wrong with the frame and with the grips, because it's a pretty tough material and it generally doesn't chip too easily. But especially for metal frame or aluminum frame guns, you should spot that kind of stuff right away. You know, but most, you're going to find that most used handguns are usually in pretty good shape. I'll tell you why. Because most used handguns, the person that's selling it hasn't shot it much. Seriously, let's talk about that. One of the reasons I like to buy used handguns is because most people who are selling them haven't shot it that much. You know, they probably bought it and they ran a box of ammo through it, didn't like the recoil or something, or just couldn't shoot very well with it, and they've only run one or two boxes of ammo through it, and now they're selling it. Or it sat in someone's safe for a long time, they never got around to shooting it, they need some money, and they're willing to unload it, and they want to, you know, unload it pretty cheap, and you can get a pretty good deal on it just because they need some money. So it's quite often that they're in pretty decent condition. Not always, but again, that exterior is going to tell you a lot about, most likely, how the interior has been taken care of. Also, ask for the gun to be field stripped. And especially if you are at a gun show and you're in front of a gunsmith, ask the gunsmith to field strip it and take a look at it. If you're at a gun store, ask the clerk to field strip the gun. What field stripping means is taking it apart briefly, taking it apart so it could be as if you're going to clean the gun. Not completely taking it apart, but field stripping basically means taking off the slide, taking the barrel out, the recoil spring out, and like you're going to clean the gun. Now, you may get some strange looks, but I'm serious. If someone is not willing to field strip that and at least take that down to the take that gun down to the point where as if you're going to clean it, if they don't want to do that, then that might be a warning sign. Now, I actually had a gun store clerk one time didn't know how to field strip the pistol that he was trying to sell. It's amazing. A lot of these gun store clerks don't get any training at all. So I kindly, and I was very nice, told him I was very seriously interested in buying the gun, and I asked him to get the supervisor, and of course the supervisor knew how to field strip it. And I wanted them to do it. In fact, most of them won't let you do it anyway. I wanted them to do it because if they screwed something up or they broke it, then it wasn't going to be my fault if something got messed up in field stripping it. So, again, you want to make sure that you let them do it. But once that has been done, once the gun's been field stripped, then let me tell you what to look for. First, look at the barrel. Look at the outside of the barrel. You know, look down the length of the barrel. Make sure it looks straight. Make sure there's no subtle bulges in that barrel. Then ask them to give you a bore light. Bore light's one of those nice little lights you can shine right down through the barrel, and you can look at the inside of it. You'll be amazed what you see when you look in the inside of the barrel of a handgun. You'll be able to tell whether that thing's been cleaned. You know, it should have been cleaned before being put on the shelf. The gun dealer is supposed to do that, but you would be surprised. And if it's dirty, ask them if they would run a couple of patches through that so you can actually tell them you want to see the inside of the barrel. You want to look at the rifling. Okay? You want to look to see if there's any, and you'll be able to tell if there's something that looks a little unusual on the inside of that barrel. And of course, if you've got someone with you, as I mentioned in the beginning of the show, they'll be able to, if they're pretty knowledgeable about firearms, they'll be able to tell you whether something doesn't look right inside that barrel. Okay? So just kind of give that a look over. Also note the position of the rear sights if it's an adjustable sight. Even if it's a fixed sight, you know, take a look at the rear sights on that slide. See if they're out of position. Okay? If the rear sights are out of position, that'll also tell you that maybe the previous owner didn't care for it too much. And also, it can tell you that the gun shop didn't do its job because they should have straightened that stuff out before they put that up for sale. So if it's way off to one side, you know, you might want to question that. You know, pass on the gun if you start to see any barrel problems, or if you're getting a lot of uncooperation, if you're getting an uncooperative clerk or an uncooperative seller, don't be afraid to pass on the gun. There's a lot of them that are for sale out there, believe it or not. Even in today's political climate, there's still a lot of firearms being purchased and sold out there. After you've had a chance to look at the barrel, the sights, look at the grips again, and just make sure that you don't have any splits in the wood. If you've got wood grips, you know, no chips and things like that, give those a look over again. Also, get permission to dry fire the gun. You know, this is very critical. You want to test what that trigger feels like. Again, double check. Triple check. Make sure that it's not loaded. But ask for permission to dry fire. Okay, dry firing will not hurt most center fire handguns. And let me stop right here and take a side note here. I've had people try to tell me that I shouldn't dry fire the gun that I was looking at. And I was looking at a used Glock, folks. I was looking at a used Glock. And I had a gun show clerk tell me that I shouldn't dry fire it. It would hurt it. Baloney. Most centerfire handguns made today, it's not going to hurt them for you to dry fire it. You know, you're not going to stand there and dry fire it 200 times. You could do that with a Glock anyway, and it's not going to hurt it. You could do that with most centerfire handguns today, and it's not going to hurt it. Now, if you're doing a lot of dry fire practicing after you buy the gun, snap caps are recommended. But it's not going to hurt the pistol for you to dry fire it a few times while you're in the shop or at the show. So if somebody tells you that, you know, you might want to move on, find another seller, because they're a bozo if they tell you that. And it's not going to hurt most revolvers either. Some of the older-fashioned revolvers and single-action revolvers and stuff I can understand, but not if it's a current production, current model type of revolver. It's not going to hurt it. But you're looking for trigger pull weight. What you're looking for is how that trigger feels and whether that trigger pull is consistent. You're looking to see if it's consistent from shot to shot. Does it pull the same time? Does it pull the same way every time? That's going to tell you a lot about the pistol also. You're also going to be able to figure out pretty quickly if there's been any trigger work done to it. You'll be able to pretty much tell whether it feels right or not. And again, if you're at a gun show and you have a gunsmith that's got the gun taken apart, sometimes they might be able to take a good hard look at the trigger assembly and let you know whether it's been modified or not. That's also what you want to look for. You want to look to see if there's been any kind of wacky modifications to the trigger, because I'll warn you about something. I'll warn you about buying a gun that's had a modified trigger. You know, first of all, you're inheriting possibly a much greater liability. You know, if you modify it after you buy it, I tell you what, for a defensive gun, I would not recommend ever modifying a trigger for a defensive gun. I'm a big fan of leaving triggers the way they are when they came from the factory. If it's a carry gun and a defensive gun. The reason being is because that's just another excuse and another tool for an angry lawyer to use against you. If you have to use that gun to defend yourself and you end up in court, that's another reason that a lawyer can come after you. If you have a lightened trigger or a modified unsafe trigger, they're going to use that against you. Trust me. Learn to shoot your gun with the factory trigger on it if it's going to be a carry gun. But again, the trigger pull weight. Check that when you're buying it. See if it's consistent. Okay? Also, as I mentioned earlier, looking inside the barrel. Take a second look at the inside of the barrel. Especially if the first time you looked in there it was dirty, have them clean it, take a second look into it. Also, the controls. You want to check the slide stop lever. You want to make sure that the slide stop lever will hold the slide open without you having to force it. In other words, with most semi-automatic pistols, all right, take a magazine out. Make sure there's no magazine in the gun. Rack the slide. In other words, pull the slide all the way back. The slide stop lever should engage and hold that slide open with no magazine in the gun. Keep a magazine in the gun. Made a mistake. Keep the magazine in the gun. If there's no magazine in the gun, then it's probably going to go ahead and close. But keep the magazine in the gun, an empty magazine, and pull that slide back. It should be held open by the slide stop lever, because that's what a pistol is supposed to do. Most semi-automatics are supposed to hold the slide open after the last shot. Okay, that's the way they're supposed to operate. So basically what you're doing is you're simulating the last shot being fired. And when you pull that slide back, it should stay open. That slide stop lever should engage. If it does not, and if that slide will not stay open with a magazine, an empty magazine inserted into the gun, that could be a sign of a problem. Next thing you want to check is push the magazine release button. And make sure that that magazine comes out of there freely and quickly. Make sure that magazine doesn't stick when you push that magazine release button. It should come out of there, you know, fairly easily. You know, you shouldn't have to yank that magazine out of there. If there's a grip safety on a gun, if it's a 1911 style or some of the Springfield XDs that have a grip safety, make sure the gun does not fire unless that grip safety is fully depressed. So hold the pistol in such a way where you're not pressing on that grip safety with the web of your hand and pull the trigger. Okay? It should not fire unless you're pushing, applying pressure to that grip safety. Okay, the other thing you want to do is go ahead and make sure that the gun is, that the slide is all the way forward. In other words, that the pistol's returned back to battery in the all the way completely forward position. And then you want to see if you've got what we call some slide slop. Make sure you don't have any slide slop. In other words, make sure that that slide's not just rattling around on the slide rails. You know, hold the pistol in your hand, kind of shake it a little bit, and see if that slide's rattling around back and forth. Usually they don't. And, you know, a little bit of play is okay. You know, every pistol is going to have a little bit of play in the slide. Some of them are so tight. So, you know, some of the 1911s out there, the Target match grade 1911s, are really tight, and they're not going to have any play in them. That's good. But most of them are going to have some play in it. A little bit is okay. A whole lot, if it's rattling, that's probably not a good thing. You should question that. Okay? Now, while you're looking at the slide, take a look at the ejection port. The ejection port's the cutaway in the slide where the spent casing is ejected out of the gun. Check that for excessive wear or cracks. Some slides will crack right there at the front of the ejection port. Check to see if there's a lot of wear there. Could mean that there's been maybe the extractors were not tuned properly. You know, maybe the extractor needed some adjustment and it never got done, and maybe that gun was fired a lot and abused, and those rounds were improperly hitting the ejection port. So aluminum alloy frames are particularly susceptible to hairline cracks. So if you're looking at a gun that has an aluminum alloy frame, just check that slide anyway, and also check the frame. Check both the slide and the frame, and just kind of look for some cracks. Most of the cracks you're going to see are going to be in the aluminum frame. However, any gun can have excessive wear on the ejection port if something was out of adjustment and it was fired a lot. So you want to take a look at those two parts as well. Last but certainly not least, check the magazine. Now, I've been a firm believer that the magazine's what runs your gun. It's one of the most important parts of reliability in a pistol. So what you want to do is check it for a lot of excessive wear. You know, a proper magazine is very important to functioning of a good semi-automatic pistol. First of all, check to make sure you have an original brand name magazine and that it's in good condition. So if you're buying a Springfield XD, you know, make sure that what you're getting is a couple of Springfield XD brand magazines. If you're buying a Glock, make sure you're getting Glock magazines. If you're buying a Kimber, make sure you're getting some Kimber or some good Wilson Combat or Chip McCormick magazines. Those are some good aftermarket manufacturers of 1911 magazines. Take a look at the feed lips. The feed lips on a magazine they're located right at the top of the magazine, and those are the two little lips that basically hold the bullets in place in the magazine. Now, with guns that have metal magazines, sometimes those feed lips can be bent, they can have cracks, they can have excessive wear, and sometimes they won't hold those bullets in there very well. So ask the clerk or ask the person that you're buying it from to let you have a magazine, and if there is some ammo available in that caliber, you know, stick a bullet in there and see if it's going to hold it in there tightly. It'll also tell you whether the magazine spring is real tight or not. If it's holding the bullet in there real tightly, you've got a good tight magazine spring, and the feed lips are okay. But if not, then you may have a problem, so check on that. With polymer magazines that are in most Glocks, it's not usually a problem, but you know, look for cracks at the top of the magazine as well, and then also check the floor plate of the magazine. Generally, they're real flat. The floor plate is the very bottom of the magazine. It's a little plate. Make sure that there's no cracks in that. You know, you also don't want a floor plate busting off, because then your spring and all your ammo is going to come shooting out of the bottom of that magazine the first time you try to use that gun. So hopefully I've made some sense here on some of the the things to look at. Sorry about a couple of mistakes there. I'm actually driving while I'm recording this, so I'm having to concentrate and make sure I don't get myself into an accident while I'm also talking to you. That's what I would check for buying a used gun. Remember, you know, most good quality guns, most brand name guns that that you have to spend a fair amount of money for, most of them are built to last a long time. You know, there are some, you know, what I call lower cost manufacturers out there, and I'd be wary of buying some of those, you know, on a used basis anyway, High Points and stuff like that. I'd be pretty wary about something, a handgun that you pay less than $200 for, a semi-automatic, I'd be a little bit leery of. You can still get good revolvers if you shop around on the used market for less than a couple hundred dollars, but it's pretty tough to find a good quality used handgun that's semi-automatic for less than a couple hundred dollars. So that'd be a tip-off right there that you might want to be a little bit concerned about it. But, you know, anything that's in a reasonable price range is typically built to last a long time. And again, remember, most people haven't shot it that much, so it's probably in decent condition anyway. So again, hopefully I've given you some good information, some things to look for. I know I went through this kind of fast. Feel free to shoot me an email if you've got some more questions on the website at handgunworld.com. All right, the next subject, I want to talk about buying guns on the internet. Again, regardless of what people tell you, it's very feasible, and many times you can get some good deals. Now, let me tell you what's involved. The federal government and the laws from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms say that if you're going to purchase a firearm on the internet, the sales must go through what we call an FFL, a Federal Firearms License Holder. Also, they're commonly called FFL holders. They are the people that are licensed gun dealers, licensed gun brokers, if you will. They're the ones that have to complete the sale because they have to comply with your state's laws of selling a firearm. So here's how the process works. When you locate a firearm that you want to purchase online, I'm going to get into the details of how to consummate that transaction here in a minute. But once the transaction is done, the seller, if they are a federal firearms license holder and they are in another state, you're buying from another state, they are going to have to ship that to a federal firearms license holder in your state. Okay, if you're buying from a private person on the internet, and I've done it many times, you can get great deals from private people selling their guns on the internet. You just have to be careful of some things, which I'm going to talk about. They also have to ship it to an FFL holder in your state. Now, if you don't know how to find an FFL holder, just get on the internet and Google FFL holder and then put in your state's name. And you will find a list of federal firearms license holders in your state. Most gun shops, in fact, all gun shops, are going to be federal firearms license holders. So also gun shops, for a fee, will accept the shipment from the seller and then complete the necessary paperwork and background checks, if any, to sell you that gun. Now, let me tell you about some advantages of buying on the internet. There are some clear advantages. First of all, if you're buying a firearm on the internet, out of state, you don't pay any tax. You don't pay any sales tax on it. It's just like buying any other product out of state. And if it's being shipped across state lines, you don't pay any income tax. You don't pay any sales tax on it. Now, I've heard some rumors of that being changed, but as of the date of this recording, that's still the way it works. No sales tax. You can also access a very large selection of guns on the internet. You know, many dealers just don't have a whole lot of stock these days because there's been a big run on guns. Because of the pinheads that we have that work in our government, there's, you know, gun sales are going through the roof right now. So it's hard for some dealers to maintain stock. On the internet, you can usually find almost anything, at least one of almost any gun that you're looking for. Now, let me give you the name of a couple of good sites to look at. One of them is gunbroker.com, www.gunbroker.com. The other one is auctionarms.com, auctionarms.com. These are two auction sites, sort of like eBay, for selling firearms and firearms accessories and ammunition. Gunbroker.com, auctionarms.com, gunsamerica.com. Those are three real good sources. For those of you, even though this is a Handgun World podcast, let's talk a little bit about rifles. Atlantic Firearms is also another really good place to find some good semi-automatic rifles. AIM Surplus, AIM Surplus, they've got some very good surplus rifles, military surplus rifles. There's all kinds of good sources. If you just kind of, if you search on the internet for gun shops, even on the internet, you'll be amazed as to what you'll turn up. There's another one called Bud's Gun Shop. That's another good one, budsgunshop.com. I've actually purchased some products from them and had very good luck with them. So no tax if buying out of state and accessing a very large selection of new and used firearms. Now, some of the disadvantages. Of course, probably the most obvious disadvantage of buying a gun on the internet, you can't inspect it. Everything I talked about in the first part of this show, you can't really do very much inspection on a gun that you're buying on the internet. Now, most of these auction sites are going to have pretty good pictures. In the listing, if it's a seller worth their salt, and every time I've ever sold a handgun on the internet, I put a lot of detailed pictures in my listings. A lot of close-up, very detailed pictures. I take my time. I usually include anywhere from 6 to 10 good quality pictures because I know that buyer is going to want to see most of the detail parts of the gun. And that's kind of like their initial inspection, and that's going to be your initial inspection, is the quality of the pictures. You can normally gauge the quality of the seller and the quality of the gun by the quality of the pictures that are on the internet. So there's your first clue. But, you know, one of the disadvantages, you cannot actually physically inspect it and field strip it and so on and so forth. So that is one of the disadvantages. You're also going to have to pay shipping costs, and you're going to have to pay FFL transfer fees. In other words, the federal firearms license holder that's going to transfer that gun, that's going to actually complete the sale, he's going to charge you a fee. I've seen those fees as low as $10. I've got a real good friend of mine that does it for me for $10. But if you don't have a good friend of yours that'll do it for $10, some of them are $25, $30, or $35. So you have to add the shipping costs and the FFL transfer fees on top of the price of the gun. So if the gun's $500, you might get charged $30 for shipping, and you might get charged $25 for transfer, so add $55 to the $500 cost. Also, handguns have to be shipped overnight, so you're going to end up paying a cost to ship those guns overnight. Sorry, as you can hear, I had to grab a phone call. So anyway, handguns have to be sent overnight. So that's why you're likely to pay $30, $35, maybe even $40 for the shipping. Federal laws say that handguns, if they're going to be shipped, have to be shipped overnight. So those are some of the disadvantages, is that no inspection and you've got the additional fees. But still, if you can save enough money on the gun and find what you want, then it's worth buying them on the internet. On an auction site, it works a lot like eBay. You have to bid on the gun, and the winning bidder obviously is the buyer of that firearm. Sometimes they'll have a buy it now, and of course I think you probably know how buy it now works. If you're willing to pay that price, the buy it now price, then you're the buyer of the gun. Now, I'm a private citizen. I am not a FFL. I do not have a license. But I have purchased and I have sold many firearms on the internet. Again, if I'm selling it, I have to ship it to the buyer's FFL dealer. If I'm buying it, then the seller ships it to my FFL dealer that I've prearranged that is near me. It's not necessary for the guns to be sold by FFL dealers. The FFL has to be the one that does what we call a transfer. In other words, they complete the paperwork and the proper method of completing the sale. That is federal law. And if you have any questions about how that works, find somebody who is a dealer, but it's pretty simple. Once you make the sale, you pay for the gun. Let's say you're buying it. It's being shipped to you. Once you pay for it, you get your federal firearms dealer to fax his or her copy of his license to the seller. Now, faxes are acceptable. Didn't used to be. Usually, it used to be where your FFL dealer had to send the original of his license, the original or a signed copy with an original signature on it. Faxes are now acceptable. There are some FFL dealers that don't want to fax their license, so what they will do is I would suggest that you pay by cashier's check and send the cashier's check along with a copy of your FFL's license to the seller. Okay? Then the seller will ship it, and it'll have the license will have your FFL's address on there, so the seller will then in turn ship it to your FFL. Your FFL dealer then will probably call you when he gets the gun in, and you'll meet up with him, take care of, I think, what's called the 4473 form, which is the federal form that you have to fill out. And, of course, in the great state of Texas, all you have to do is show your concealed carry license, and they don't even have to do a background check. But some states don't operate that way. You still have to go through the background check, and if there's a waiting period, you have to go through the waiting period. All the standard laws apply. Okay, I want to make sure I be very clear that all the standard laws are going to apply. I would also make another suggestion. Before you buy a gun on the internet, go to a local gun shop and see if they've got one. Not that you're going to buy it from them, but again, you'll be able to look at it. You'll be able to see if it fits your hand, if they have one in the rental counter. Rent it. Go shoot the rental gun at the range. See if you can shoot well with it. You know, do as much of your homework as you can before you find the gun on the internet. Okay, but hopefully that gives you some basic idea. A couple of other things I do want to mention that it's important for you to know when you're buying a gun on the internet. Ask plenty of questions before you place a bid. Because if it's an auction site, it's like all the other auction sites out there. You're obligated to buy that gun once you bid on it. You can email all the questions you want to the seller. If the seller doesn't want to answer your questions, or if they give you short answers that don't answer your questions, be wary of that. But ask lots of questions. Don't be afraid to ask for additional pictures, additional close-up pictures. Sometimes they'll email them directly to you, or they will put them on the listing. Also, look at the seller's rating. On these auction sites, they're all rated, just like they are on eBay. I have an excellent gun rating. I have an excellent rating on GunBroker.com. Okay, I've purchased and I've sold firearms, and I have an A-plus rating. I have no negative ratings on my record on GunBroker.com, and that's important. Also, it doesn't hurt, ask the seller for a return policy. Many sellers, if they're a dealer that's selling on the auction site or a dealer just selling off of their website, many times they'll give you a 3-day inspection return policy. So once your federal firearms license holder calls you and says your gun is in, you complete the sale, you've got 3 days to inspect the gun. Not shoot it, but to inspect it and make sure that it meets your standards. Some of them will do that. Once you find a gun that you're satisfied, though, go ahead and bid and follow the process for purchasing that firearm. And finally, once you've completed the sale and you get your gun, internet sellers love to get your feedback, and they're kind of like me. They take pride in their good feedback. That's the reputation that they're building on the internet. So go ahead and give them some good feedback, okay? They're going to be looking for that. Also, don't be afraid to give negative feedback where it's warranted. I've done it. I actually bought some parts, not a gun, but I bought some parts that I wasn't very happy with from an internet seller, and I let him know about it, and he got a little bit of a negative mark on his rating because of it. So again, buying on the internet, hopefully I've given you some pretty good tips, and I've kind of explained how that process works and how to go about it. Let me just recap real quick some of the advantages and disadvantages of that. The advantage, you save some tax money, you get to take advantage of a large selection out there, and it's really good for hard-to-find guns. Guns that are tough to find, that are kind of rare, or those that are in high demand right now. What's great, you can get on the internet, and of course you got thousands and thousands of dealers and private citizens that have guns for sale, and you're quite likely to find what you want on the internet. And of course the disadvantages being that you can't inspect it, and you have to pay shipping fees and license transfer fees. Okay. Hopefully that gives you some good information. Now, Pinheads and Patriots segment. I'm going to have a little bit of fun with this one. Okay, in case you didn't know, there was recently a bill in the United States Senate to create greater reciprocity for concealed carry holders, meaning that if you have a concealed carry license, if this bill would have passed, any other state that allows concealed carry would have to accept your license. Currently, that's not the case. States can pretty much choose which licenses they want to honor and which ones they don't want to honor. A good website to go to, by the way, is handgunlaw.us. Handgunlaw.us. Everything you want to know about concealed carry laws. Anyway, the bill failed in the Senate. It lost by 2 votes. So we do not have the right for our license to be accepted by any other state that allows concealed carry. Now, in Texas, what's great is that my license is accepted in, I think, 37 different states. But anyway, the pinheads are two Republicans who did not vote for this. You know, generally Republicans are fairly gun-friendly conservative politicians that believe in gun rights. Well, the two pinheads that did not vote for this are Senator Voinovich in Ohio and Senator Dick Lugar in Indiana. Dick Lugar in Indiana, George Voinovich in Ohio. They voted no. Because of their no votes, this did not pass the Senate and ultimately did not pass the House, and now the bill has failed. So, Senators Voinovich, Senator Lugar, you guys are the Handgun World Podcast, Episode 2, Pinheads. Come on, guys. Now, you know, at first I was somewhat leery of this bill because it gives the federal government power to make gun control laws. And that's kind of a slippery slope, folks. If you think about it, we really don't want our federal government getting too much involved. You know, we want to preserve states' rights. But in this case, I'm going to say that this would have been a good law to pass because it would have given much, much more freedom for concealed carry license holders. And, you know, the more gun rights that we can get, the better off we're going to be. I'm just a little bit nervous, though, about the federal government running gun laws. You know, I just don't like that. I mean, you know, the Constitution gives us the right to keep and bear arms, period. But anyway, it is what it is. I would have liked to have seen this pass. If you live in Ohio and you live in Indiana and you are upset about this, you might want to let Senator Voinovich and Senator Lugar, I can't figure out why they decided to vote against this. So they are the pinheads. Now, who's the patriot? Well, believe it or not, the Senate Majority Leader, Harry Reid, he voted for it. Can you believe that? Senator Harry Reid, Democrat, voted for it. So he's a patriot. He gets my patriot vote. There was also a lot of other Democrats that voted for it. Max Baucus, Vermont. Evan Bayh, Indiana. Senator Casey, Pennsylvania. Senator Dorgan, North Dakota. Senator Feingold in Wisconsin, which is really my home state of Wisconsin. I'm surprised Feingold voted in favor of it, but he did. So, you know, when these politicians do things right, I'm going to say that they're doing right. I'm going to call them out as being somebody that does something good. And when these pinhead Republicans vote against it, I'm going to call them out on it too. So, Anyway, they're the Pinheads and the Patriots. It was 58 votes yes, and the nays were 39, and I guess there were some other people who did not. There were three of them who didn't vote for it. Senator Byrd, Senator Kennedy, and Senator Mikulski did not vote. I don't know if you know, but in the United States Senate, it takes 60 votes to pass something for sure. In other words, it takes 60 votes to present to prevent a filibuster, and they didn't get the 60 votes. So, way to go, Pinheads. And that pretty much wraps up the second episode of the Handgun World podcast. I would love to get some feedback from you. Go ahead and post a comment on the website if you feel so inclined. This is your show. I would like to make this show as much yours as it is mine, so I'd love to get the feedback from you. So this is Bob Main with another episode of the Handgun World podcast. Why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for listening.